Hello, I'm Dan.
Hello, I'm... Hang on, why, I never say hello. No. I'm Simon.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Simon, what are we talking about this week?
This week, Dan, we're talking about Andrei Vlasichev. Andrei Vlasichev. Let's go with that.
Andrei Vlasichev.
Yep.
Right.
Would you like to make a hazard guess as to who this person is?
Is he from Northern Europe?
No, not from Northern Europe.
Is he from Eastern Europe?
Yes.
Is
well, he... I mean, like, you could kind of argue it's either... No, really, okay, really it's Central Asia, yeah.
Right, okay.
So he comes from a country that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Is he an academic?
No.
Is he a sports person?
He is a sports person.
Mm.
He is... I'll read you the first sentence of his article. Andrei Vlasichev, born 27th of January 1981, is a Uzbek professional football player who plays for Lokomotiv Tashkent and before for FC Paktakor Tashkent in the Uzbek League. So he was born in the old Soviet, the Uzbek SSR, or the Uzbek Soviet Socialist Republic.
Wow.
So with the fall of the Soviet Union, it reverted to Uzbekistan, which is a country that I know pretty much nothing about.
Yeah, likewise.
I like the name Uzbekistan. I think it's a very cool name.
The only thing I know about it is it was the, it played a big role in the, it was the third Harry Potter book, wasn't it?
Did it?
Yeah, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Uzbekistan, wasn't that the...
Oh, yeah, he did his waiting in Uzbekistan. It's 13 years.
Yeah.
So looking at the wiki for it, it's, is it one of the really corrupt countries? I know that one of the stans is one of, or is that Tajikistan?
Turkmenistan?
Like, there's one of the old Soviet bloc countries in that area that's like notoriously corrupt.
Right.
Also, looking at its flag, I did not recognize that flag, which doesn't happen very often. Like, I'm pretty good on flags, but that one was a complete surprise to me. So this guy, basically, I have basically read you his entire article, apart from the fact that he used to play for FC Baltika Kaliningrad in the Russian First Division and FC Ordubasy in the Kazakhstan Premier League. And he's made 11 appearances for the national football team of Uzbekistan.
Good heavens.
And that's it. That's as much as we're getting from this dude. I love the name Lokomotiv Tashkent.
Yes.
LOKOMOTIV Lokomotiv.
Yeah, it's like the phonetic spelling of it, right?
Lokomotiv Tashkent. I think this is like because Kazakhstan, which it borders, recently changed its alphabet from it's in the past like it was Arabic, I want to say, and it was Cyrillic,
yeah,
and now it's Roman.
Yeah,
and I feel like Uzbekistan might be one of these places where there has been this mishmash of Arab influences and Cyrillic, like kind of Russian influences, and probably Asian stuff coming in from the East as well. So it's like a melting pot of all these different ideas. So trying to render something in like English, in the English form, is probably going to be like, you know, you do it phonetically.
Yeah,
I'd love to learn more about this country. Do we have any listeners, any readers in Uzbekistan?
I don't know. We'll struggle to find out, given that it's no longer a country.
No. Uzbekistan is the Soviet Republic.
The Soviet, yes, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't.
We might be able to see it on the Podbean statistics, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there are 33 million people there.
Wow.
So it's actually quite a big country.
That's
way
more than I thought.
I thought it was going to be like the size of, I don't know, like 10, less than 10, five, like kind of Wales, kind of like 5 million, that kind of range.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, okay. So I think I might have been right about the whole corruption thing because, wow. Okay. Following the death, so I'm now on the Uzbekistan wiki page. Following the death of Islam Karimov in 2016, who I think was the kind of the president from the founding of the republic to 2016. The new president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, oh, I feel so bad because this is the president of a country. Shavkat Mirzi Yoyev started a new course which is described as a quiet revolution and revolution from above. He abolished cotton slavery, systematic use of child labour, introduced tax reforms, and amnestied many political prisoners. So he basically brought them up into, you know, the 21st century.
Yeah.
Like, he abolished cotton slavery. How is that still a thing?
Well,
apparently it's a major exporter of cotton, actually. And it operates the largest open-pit gold mine in the world. And renewable energy constitutes 23% of the country's energy sector. Isn't that nice? Well, good on you, Uzbekistan. Although, is that where the Aral Sea is? You know, A-R-A-L. Okay, here we go. The Aral Sea used to be the fourth largest inland sea on Earth. But what struck... Because I know that that's the sea that's, like, shrunk by, like, 80% or something. If you look at satellite pictures, it's terrifying. And it's because of the cotton industry, because it uses so much water. Well, an interesting country. I must learn more about this place. I also need to learn more about what you've been up to, because we didn't do an episode last week.
We
haven't caught up, and we're very sorry for that, guys, but we were just basically I think was just way too busy. I was away almost all of last week. And yeah, we couldn't find the time to record, so
it worked quite well, actually, because in terms of kind of my hours scheduled to work skyrocketed. I had to do way more than I do normally, just because I covered for a couple of people, which is why I got to work less this week, which is pleasant. It's been really it's been colossally busy. We've got May coming up, which is exam month and essay month, which is going to be really quite busy. Got the Bach B minor Mass on the 5th, which is terrifyingly close. It's just been all battle stations for everybody, really. But it's been nice, though. We've had some really cracking weather. Where it's been dreadful and kind of rubbish. But equally, there were days where I think it got up to about 20 or 22.
Because I was, last week, one of the things that meant we couldn't record was I was in Dorset on holiday with some friends, and we were down by sort of like Durdle Door and Lyme Regis and places like that, and it was like 24, 25 degrees.
It was really nice.
Spectacular.
I spent a day doing some reading and work outside in the garden. I had breakfast outside, a fried breakfast, and a pot of loose leaf tea, which is just, I mean... absolute morning goals. Radio 4 on in the background. I did a bit of work through the day, and then I went and wandered down to the quay. I walked down to Double Locks, which is a really nice pub, about kind of a 25-minute walk away from the quay in Exeter. Then came back, and then a friend of mine came over in the evening, and we had some bevs, and it was really, really pleasant. We had so many bevs, in fact, that we retreated inside when it got cold, and we decided before heading out onto the town to paint the town red, we put on some Paul Mealer.
Oh, you mad lads. Absolute mad lads.
To tell you what's even madder, I then sent him a video of us preying. Paul, yeah. I private messaged him on Twitter, saying, you know, just some classic banterful tunes in the evening before we head out to the clubs. And the lad replied within like 10 minutes, being like, excellent. He was like, I'm in Warsaw at the moment with my choir, so I've got to be tame on the drinking, but have a good night. I'll have to join you at some point. And I'm like, ah. He just keeps going off.
Life that we live. So for those that don't know, maybe you should explain who Paul Mealer is and why he's like a big deal.
So Paul Mealer is a current, very well known, very successful composer of choral music and orchestral music.
He's extant. You know, he's still alive.
He wrote for the Royal Wedding, his setting of Ubi Caritas, which is lovely. Which is basically the same music to one of the four Spotless Rose motets that he did, which Chapel did not long ago. But basically, all of his music is fantastic. He's got a really, really unique and kind of identifiable style.
So he wrote, he wrote the Ubi Caritas for the Royal Wedding because the lyrics that were originally in the Spotless Rose.
Now sleeps the crimson petal.
Yes, it's erotic poetry. Basically,
yes, it is.
And so they clearly, Kate and Will heard it and were like, yeah, we like it, but could you just get rid of the sex, please? Put some church music in there.
One of the lines is, Now droops the milk-white peacock like a ghost, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, is just basically you're singing about dick for a lot of the time. but he writes really superb music, and I'm quite a big fan. And I have plans to try and do, if I make a return to Exeter University Singers next year, potentially in my second term, depending on how busy I am. I'd love to do some of his. He's done a massive work. I'm getting all emotional. a massive work called Stabat Mater, which I believe is either 5 or 6 movements long, some of which are a cappella, some of which have orchestral accompaniment. And they're so big that you probably need, with us, we'd probably need another choir. So it'd be really cool if we could get kind of like singers and harmonics together to do that. Mm. And I mentioned that to him on Twitter, and he said, "Oh, we'll have to come down if you do." So that'd be amazing. I'd love to meet him and have a chat.
Because we know him, and you follow each other on Twitter because Dr. Jones, who was our organ scholar at Exeter Chapel Choir, was his PhD student,
who is now number 2 at St. Mary's Belfast.
Yeah, and apparently, you know. Well. He had to delay submitting his thesis because Paul Miller was, you know, writing stuff for the royal wedding and that kind of thing, which was, it's kind of a pretty awesome problem to have.
Yeah. I've been listening to a lot of new stuff, actually, this month, which we'll get onto in Critics Corner. But
I've got some. I also know that you have an exciting film to talk about.
Oh my gosh. Critics, yeah, I totally do. I'm not going to say what it is just yet. This is going to be kind of like dangling the carrot in front of the listeners, but make sure you stay listening until Critics Corner, because I have a lot to say and it's very exciting. And Simon's got, you've just been and seen Infinity War.
Right, I have a bone to pick with View Cinemas, all right? This is f***ing bullshit.
I'm seeing it tonight, incidentally.
Because, right, Alex and I were at the gym last night and we were saying basically, wouldn't it be amazing if we could go and see Infinity War, go home, work through the night, and get a video out by the morning that looks at some aspect of the science of the film, and just like get on the bandwagon, like just get ahead of everyone. No one else is going to do that.
Yeah.
And then we looked at the View Cinema, and he was like, wait, hang on. The first showing is at 1 minute past midnight, so 00:01 on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, I would interpret that as meaning the midnight between... like, it's just after the midnight between Tuesday and Wednesday, right? It's one minute past, but it's on Wednesday. So we interpreted that as meaning...
I see what you mean.
You see, right?
Yeah.
That should mean that it was yesterday's midnight.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it's this tonight. Midnight that you're going to go see it. But, like, I thought that was true, but the website, we were just like, have we just messed this up by a day? We turned up and we kind of... pushed our way through the doors and it was absolutely dead. Nobody there. And there was just one kind of cleaner guy who kind of wandered in after a couple of minutes. And we were like, is there a queue for Infinity War? And he was like, nah, that's tomorrow. I don't think we were the first people that had had this problem.
Was there anything showing at midnight when you went? Did you just pop in and see something anyway?
I think things were like going to come out. I think that's why it was still open. Like there was still a screening happening of something.
But
it was just funny. Like this completely dead cinema. We were like, we could have just smashed and grabbed thousands of pounds of popcorn in like a couple of Tupperware things. Unfortunately, I've not seen it.
Well, we'll be able to discuss it next week.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, obviously I'm going to go see it. You're going to see it at midnight.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to do some drinks this evening because it's David Harvey's. It's a birthday thing for him. Shout out to David. But yeah, see, we've got a group together. We're going to go and do some drinks first and then go and watch a film. It should be quite nice.
Well, I mean, I feel like the appropriate section for this discussion is this one, because it's not criticism, and it's not crisis, and it's not correspondence. I only went and met the bloody Oxcast, didn't I?
I saw your Instagram post. It's very exciting. How was it? What did you get up to?
Lewis looks really good in that picture, doesn't he? Like, it was literally the quickest selfie. I was like, okay, quickly up, snap, done. And then I looked it back and I was like, oh my God, he looks like he's been airbrushed.
It's that whole idea, like, the less that you do with your face, the more kind of, with that, when you've got that kind of like aloofness going, I feel that kind of works in his favour, that kind of serious kind of, which is why... usually I don't smile in photos. I'll either go to my go-to face, which is like vaguely questioning,
yeah,
or just completely deadpan, because for some reason, although of late I've been learning how to smile, and some of the photos, some of my smiles are really quite nice.
dark have been your dreams of late.
Yes.
So I went, basically, I went to Yogg Studios, which is, okay, for those of you, the five people that don't know, the Yoggscast are this massive network of YouTubers. They probably have, between the lot of them, probably getting on for like 15 million subs. Like, it's over 10. And they do gaming stuff, and they have done for years. Dan and I met each other through a mutual love of the Yoggscast, and Hatfilm specifically. And, you know, I've watched them since... I actually looked it up. I've been watching them since 2011. My first video was their Planes mod number 2 from the old Minecraft days. And, you know, so we've been watching them for ages, and eventually I got talking to their CEO, Terps, on Twitter, and he just invited... I pitched him an idea for a science video, and he invited me in to have a chat about it. And so that's what I was doing yesterday, which involved... Oh, it was so funny. The right, so... I arrived an hour early because I didn't want to be late. So I did like a bit for the vlog outside, and I was like, you know, I'm kind of shitting myself right now. This is amazingly cool. And I got to the front entrance 10 minutes early because I was like, right, you know, I knew that he had a meeting before. He was presumably going to escort Terps, was going to escort the person he was seeing out, and then he'd invite me in. Mm. What actually happened was I got to the front door, and then Barry... came out. Barry is one of the guys who does streaming for the Yoggs, and is like kind of a cult favorite. And I saw him, and I kind of snapped my head around. And I was like, oh, that's Barry. Okay, like, just act cool. Don't, you know, he doesn't know who you are. Just, it's as if anybody had come out of that building. He then walks up to me, looks at me, and goes, "You're that physics guy from YouTube." Like, he knew who I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he knew my name, and he was like, "Oh shit, I'll let you in." And then like got me up to the office part. It was on the fourth floor, and I was just like complete already like shaking. I was like, just, this is so surreal. But then Terps came in and like sort of said hi, and they showed me around the whole place, and they were all drinking Huel, you know, that liquid.
Yeah. There's some people at work who drink that.
Yeah, I think they might be pushing it at the moment, because they sent a whole like crate to the Yoggscast saying like, if you like it, you know, we can do a deal, we can promote it. So everyone was on it, but like Terps was walking me around with this like disgusting liquid drink. But like, he showed me kind of like the vague layout, and then popped into Hat Films's room, and they were in there. We had a chat for like quite a long time, actually. I was talking to Ross about just like generally making videos. I actually spoke to Ross probably in total for about an hour, which was, it was awesome. But like, they were saying to him like, what flavor have you got? And he was like, a chocolate mint. And they were like, oh, it's the best one. And he went, no, don't tell me that. This is still disgusting. Like, it's not going to get any better than this now. But like, yeah, so I was talking to them about, like kind of meeting people and like just having a chat about making videos. And then I had a long chat with Terps about strategy, about how we could do collabs together. They seemed keen for me to do a couple of videos with them, at least. And, you know, they were asking like, where was I based? Like, you know, I was getting the impression that they kind of seemed keen to do a few things in the future.
Yeah.
And Hat Films literally said to me, Ross was like, if you have any ideas for a collab that we can do together, we'd love to do one, like one on our channel, one on your channel. So
that'd be amazing.
Yeah. Like, I honestly, it was like dream come true, basically.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think the creme de la creme was, I had a long chat to Ben for a while, who I'm a big fan of, on their live stream. And then I had probably about half an hour chat to Lewis.
Yeah.
Just like completely casual. You know how like when you speak to people, especially famous people, like we had at VidCon, when you meet them and then it's basically just pleasantries. It's kind of like surface level.
Yeah, small talk.
Yeah, just having small talk. With Lewis, I felt like it went straight into actually meaningful chat. Mm. Like, he was asking me about my PhD, and like, because he did a master's, so he's quite scientifically minded.
Chemistry, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, talking about that, and then we were talking about the Jingle Jam, and talking about like ideas that he had for series, and I made a suggestion. I won't say, in case, like, I don't know, I don't want to get in trouble, but I suggested a change to this series plan that he had, and he thought about it and was like, yeah, I like that. That's actually a really good idea. I'll do that. And I was like, oh my god, like, I'm Grima Wormtongue in the ear of Lewis.
Yeah, late is the hour in which this conjurer chooses to appear.
Do it all on GameCubes. Don't do anything on PC. Just make GameCube content.
Keep your forked tongue behind your teeth.
Keep your weird ass controller away from me. It was just Everyone was exactly like they are in the videos. I was worried that I'd get there and everyone would be completely different. Yeah. And it would ruin my enjoyment of everything they make.
But they seem very genuine.
Yeah, they were exactly as they seem on stream and in videos. Like, you could just tell that when they make videos, it's just that there's a camera recording. Like, yes, it's not an act. And it was honestly, they were the loveliest guys. I cannot wait. I'm going to go back in to do some filming. I literally can't believe I'm saying this, with two people, at least. One with Mark Humes, talking about dragons. Mm-hmm. And with Simon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, I was talking to Terts about people to do. He was like, so what do you need for this video? Like, who do you, in terms of content, what can we provide you with? And I was like, oh, you know, I need to interview a couple of people, maybe like two to focus on. And he just immediately was like, yeah, I think Simon would be good for this. Mm. And like, I was like, oh my God, this is mental. This is absolutely mental.
I'm sick with jealousy. I mean,
don't mean to rub it in, but like, because I was tempted to, because I was vlogging the whole way, and this will appear in the vlog in like 2 weeks. I was so tempted to get Ross to like look into the vlog camera and be like, Dan, mate, you're a twat.
Yeah.
To my other alarms going off. But
as you left the office, you should have left a Wikicast T-shirt. Just positioned it so, or like a sticker, and just leave it there and see if they ever cottoned onto it.
I was chatting to Hat Films in like the main office bit, and I was saying like, you know, I was gonna get a Hat Films Suck hoodie, but like, you know, I've only just finished the PhD, so I'm gonna have to say like, you know, I'll buy it sometime soon. And they were like, oh, hang on, let's have a chat to the merch guy, and we'll just get you one. And then I went up to him, and it was, I don't know if you remember from the vlog, because I was like, oh, you're Fit Merch Mike. He shook my hand and was like, you can have two, mate. What do you want? immediately.
Amazing.
I should have, because I was, yeah, we were talking about merch. We were talking about how, like, I was doing it myself, and, like, you know, we're ordering it ourselves, we're packing it, and we're doing the whole thing, we're not through an agency, because we weren't expecting many people. And so far, there are, like, 100 and something t-shirts that I'm now going to be getting made. It was just, I think the most valuable thing I got out of it, to be honest, was the seeing that there was a community. There are like, they employ like 40 people full time, and then they have other people who come in as contractors, basically. Like it was seeing this playground of YouTubers and just being able to chat to people and like talking to Ross about how, like, you know, sometimes you make videos and they'll do really well and you have no idea why. Or you'll make a really good video and it does terribly. Like, you know, and the fact that nobody, you know, even these people that have been doing it professionally for years and years and one of the biggest channels in the world, they seem to not really know what they're doing. Like, it was that kind of comfort, like the ability just to socially engage with people that do what I do. Because obviously at the moment I live at home. I go to the gym with Alex, which is fantastic. It's like the highlight of my week. Apart from obviously recording the Wikicast. But, you know, just being able to talk to, people that get it, people that do the same thing. Apart from the whole fanboying thing, it was so valuable. I came home last night and I just, I was working until like 3 a.m. because I was like, right, we've got to get on this level. We've got to, like, let's push it. You know, it was motivating and it was reassuring, and it was one of the best days I've had in a very, very long time. Sorry for making you so jealous. Next time I'll get you along. We'll do like imagine if we got Hat Films on the Wikicast. Jesus Christ.
Oh my God,
Christ.
That'd be so cool.
Well, if you could have, because the thing is though, there's three of them, right?
Yeah.
So like, if you could have one Yogscast member, who would you ask for?
I think I'd love to have Ross on. Mm-hmm. Ross would be fab. Equally, Lewis would be really interesting to talk to as well. Same with Pyrion. I know he's not technically Yogs.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Yeah,
but they, I feel like in terms of kind of conversation working, that'd be super, super interesting. But yeah, wow, what a week you've had. That's insane.
What a story, Mark.
Yeah. that story is going to be available to download. From the Wikicast website. You can also get it on vinyl or CD from the store.
Oh God, don't make me pack anything more. For the love of God, I've already got like, we were talking about this before we recorded for context. I now have, hang on, how many items? I have 154 items to send out. There's so many. Why are you people buying our merchandise? For the love of God, stop buying our stuff. Actually, I'll tell you what I was doing. I was looking at the countries that people were sending stuff to. Because we promised free shipping. There are, how many orders? 7 orders going to Australia.
Nice.
But we've got people are buying merch, Wikicast merch from Belgium, from Bosnia and Herzegovina, from Costa Rica.
Wow.
Lots of you in Germany, Ireland, Malta, Singapore, a lot in the UK, not that many in the US, like 5 in the US. All over. It's been super, super cool. Obviously I jest with complain that you're buying you're helping the podcast by buying our merchandise.
Yeah, yeah. It's so surreal though, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd never in a million years thought I'd be in this situation.
Mm.
This is not especially apart from the Wikicast t-shirt, the To Do Calculate t-shirt, it's a joke t-shirt. I expected to sell maybe 10. The people that really, really like the channel and kind of maybe they want to meet up, if they meet up with me, they want to wear it. 80 t-shirts.
Mm.
What on earth are people doing? That's insane. So, yeah. We jest. Well, I certainly, I'm jesting because I'm complaining, but it's yeah.
Out of this world.
It is. It's. I feel like a proper YouTuber, you know? Mm. I'm gonna have to take a month to process this.
Yeah,
because we're big boy YouTubers now. We actually should probably put some stuff out on Spongy and Electric.
Yeah, this is true.
Well, I'm almost tempted to invite people to be look, the problem with Spongy and Electric is we can record stuff, not a problem at all. It's more a question of just editing it. I started editing the Kerbal Space Program video, and I haven't made any progress with that for ages because I have no time. I have been rushed off my feet for the past couple of weeks.
It's also a case of prioritizing what needs to be edited, So
yeah, Spongy and Electric stuff isn't going to make money, basically.
Yeah.
And I have to view this from the standpoint of someone who is doing this for a living. I can't afford to. I can't afford just to spend time on passion projects.
To prioritize revenue.
Yeah, and it's something, bless him, that Michael actually said to me. He emailed me earlier and he was like, "Have you made any progress with this particular video? I feel really bad for asking. I don't want to ask you to do stuff after this because it's not fair."
Mm.
I would love more than anything to just sit and play Magicka with you for 2 hours a week and we just chop it up into episodes. And that wouldn't be that much editing, but it is it's extra brain power, it's extra fat.
It's extra hours in the day as well. I think that's the other biggest thing. It's just actually, finding the time. Once you're there and doing it, it's great, but it's justifying that and planning it, especially if we're going to be doing stuff vaguely kind of locally. It means, finding a time where it's feasible, so either for me to travel up, which means I basically need to make sure that it's all well and good having a day off. But equally, in this lead up to May, I've got to be that's a whole day away.
Yeah.
I've got essays due and exams to do. And,
yeah,
and then also means that it's a day me going up traveling and doing something. And then when I get back the next day, it's work again. So it's kind of justifying the a day off to actually have some time away. Yeah, it's.
It is. I don't know. Do you think it would be silly to invite people to say, if somebody fancies editing experience, is that a really dumb suggestion?
No, not at all. I think, obviously you'll have to vet the final product. So we'll send it back and we'll see. And then you could either give feedback or go, actually, this is really, really good. And then kind of work it through there. Because that would certainly be.
Yeah.
That would take, it's not. That's not the point of your making of the producing of videos now isn't down to making sure that you have the final say in terms or you are there throughout the entirety of the editing process, because people aren't watching for the editing, they're watching for the content.
Yeah.
Which is why most YouTubers don't edit their own videos.
Yeah. I feel that's certainly true for something like Spongy and Electric. I feel if I stopped editing my vlogs, then that would be a problem, because part of what people watch for is, the way I edit stuff.
Yeah, you've got a style, but equally, when people bring when Yogscast brought on more editors, part of that process was you understand how we make videos and you understand where I would make an editing choice here. You've got to also be in that frame of mind. So I think to a degree, being part of the process is there, but it as far as it being kind of absolutely instrumental to. Does Casey edit his videos? He doesn't, does he?
I think he does with Dan, with his Sith African friend. Like, because he has his own style again.
But with a style like that, that is kind of so affected, it's easier to kind of mimic or kind of like, or understand where he's coming, you know, because like there are, you know, that he's got kind of an archive and collection of go to either like transitions or
he's got an aesthetic like
that
you could,
like that kind of aesthetic is because it's so him and it's so identifiable, it means that it's then easier to replicate each time. I think the videos that you wouldn't be able to do that with would be stuff like, you know, I keep forgetting his name, that Canadian guy that Hatfilm saw when they were in Canada.
Oh, the helicopter cool dude. Yeah.
Brendan somebody or somebody, Brendan something.
Brandon? So, yeah, so it was like this really, I feel really bad because he was an awesome YouTuber.
He's fantastic. I'd absolutely love, if I ever went to Canada, which I'd love to because I've never been, I'd love to go up on one of those. But like in terms of like a lot of the style of his videos is less the kind of the editing process, but the actual production of that video. So it's you know, like using particular lenses and focal lengths of the camera and achieving that as what's known to you. Like it's super cinematic.
Yeah.
And that's separate to kind of like the editing process. Obviously there is some editing there as well, but it's more done with the actual filming itself.
Are we actually doing this? Are we actually saying to people, look, if you would like to edit gaming stuff for us, is this a thing that we're doing right now? Are we
going
to put this in the podcast?
Let's say if you're interested and at least you'd like to have the conversation with us.
Yeah,
first.
It's not like a commitment. Maybe that's the way to go to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, email spongyelectric@gmail.com. In the subject, pop in editing opportunity. We'll get back to you with an idea of what it would kind of be. And like maybe we could provide as like a start
a 10-minute clip. Or like a session, maybe like us playing Magicka. Say we actually do sit down for an hour or something. Maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe we record for like an hour. I edit the first video, which would be I'm thinking like Game Grumps kind of length, like 10 to 15 minutes, kind of that range. And then you know send that to people. And then maybe future episodes we say like send us the other ones how you would like to edit them, put your own style on it if you want, if you think there's a way that you can make what I've done better, then do it.
Yeah.
And then
that would be interesting actually to say like, look, here's a bulk load of like of unedited just raw like video and do with it what you want. We're looking for kind of like 10 to 12 minutes per kind of episode. But in terms of what you actually want to do with that kind of that video, you can see what we normally do. But then also, if you're wanting to develop your own kind of style and technique and make it something that's personal to you, then we also be up for that as well.
I feel like the other thing we should probably stress is that like this wouldn't be unpaid. Like,
oh, yeah,
I feel
exactly.
Because it's I definitely not want people to work for nothing. No. I mean also like. We'd have to work out how that would work. Oh my god, are we actually doing this? Is this because the thing is, we've always said that like we want to do this. We've never actually done it because said we don't have the time. So like this is the solution.
We can at least start the ball rolling. I think you know, like if we reached a point where you know we're a couple of months down the line from having this conversation, and you know two or three listeners are interested, and we whittle it down to someone or two people who would be like, yeah, actually we'd be really cool for this to start, then conversations can occur with kind of like, okay, well we need to draw up some kind of like, you know, like a almost kind of like a 0 hours contract kind of thing where like you would be paid for the work that's being done, which is the whole point of us having this Wikicast fund in the first place, which because it allows us to have kind of a pot of money there to support the podcast and B the channel for things like this, you know, whether it's merch, whether it's paying an editor, whether it's travel, whether, you know, whatever, it gives us these opportunities. But yeah, we wouldn't just be expecting someone to come in, do a really great job and go, cool, thanks, see ya.
Like, yeah, yeah,
it would be paid, recognized, you know, work.
Jesus, we're actually doing this. Oh, I was not expecting this today.
We're just starting a conversation. All we're wanting at the moment is assessing interest, because we might say this and nobody could come back and be like, actually, you know what, I'm not interested in it at all. But if somebody does email back, then we can at least start the conversation and then see how things go from there. It's a win-win for us, you know. Like if no one's interested, no one's interested. If somebody is, then great.
I feel like the way that this is, email us spongeelectric@gmail.com, put in the subject line editing, and then we will, depending on like the interest, get back to people. Like we say, furnish you with a clip, and then I feel like because it doesn't even have to be one person, you know, we could divvy up the work, divvy up our forces, skittish as the British cut the city up.
Yeah.
And it might well be that we end up doing like a revenue sharing kind of thing on videos that you've edited. You get a percentage of the money that those videos make, and we would have like a contract with you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry, this is just completely blindsided me. Oh my God. I was not expecting this at this time in the morning.
It would also make sense too, I think, for like if somebody was interested in doing that, obviously to have that conversation, but we'd probably have to meet and actually have a chat, me, you, and the other party who wants to get involved. Obviously this is some way down the line, but to kind of establish less of a form, you know, like it's like the relationship between editors and content creators within Yogs or Hat Films. They have like a personable, friendly relationship with those who help. So we wouldn't just be kind of like sent, you know, keeping it really, really formal and being like, oh yeah, this is due on this time. Like we'd find some time to travel and meet and chat and get to know each other.
Yeah, hopefully. It's I mean, this is all completely new, right? We have no idea what we're doing.
That's the best thing about it though, because it, as much as we don't know what we're doing, it means that there's no real way to go about it incorrectly, because we don't know what a correct way is. So this is what I mean by it being a win-win. Obviously it's a little more daunting because we're doing this without any experience and knowledge of the process, but equally that means we can make the process our own. We don't have to fit it into a mold. We can make it how it best works for us and a potential editor.
Holy fuck. Okay, right, this is happening. This feels like the like accelerator on me has just like clicked up a notch. I've just, the Wikicast has shifted gears like in front of my eyes. Okay, that's a thing. Dan, are you happy to like take the lead coordinating this one?
Yeah, sure. As I said, we've both got access to the emails, so.
Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
I'll handle all the correspondence there.
Okay, Dan is your man when it comes to editing.
So I am your man. Speaking of your man.
Yes.
Boiler, I need to tell this story, okay? Because I'm super pleased.
Go on, I've been talking way too long.
So we before we started recording this morning, we were originally meant to start at kind of mid-morning, and I had to message Simon and say, would you mind if we delayed it by a little bit because I've got some stuff to do in the house?
Which isn't uncommon.
Yeah, I mean, there's usually, it's either Ed's not up yet and he needs to do some food, and obviously I can't record while he's cooking sausages in the frying pan because it's literally within about 5 meters of where I record. So I got up. As I usually do on a morning, I wandered into the bathroom to have a shower, put some music on, again, as is tradition, turned the shower on, no hot water.
Shocking.
After a while, it usually takes a couple of seconds. It was bizarre, because I was like, okay, it's now been running for about 10 seconds, and it's still ice cold. This is weird. I also had to pay my water bill a couple of days ago, and I haven't done it yet, because I'm waiting for my second party to send me the money for the bills.
Ed.
So I was like, okay, so I turned the shower off, went to the sink, turned the hot tap on, also no hot water. At this point, I'm now a bit worried. I feel the radiator. It normally comes on for like an hour in the morning, basically so I can warm my towel because I'm a little bitch. I came downstairs and there was no sound from the boiler cupboard at all. Normally it's either ticking away or doing something. And I opened it up and there were lots of red lights. And on the little LCD screen, it was flashing the word error and then like 10112 or 108 or 107 or something like that. So at this point, I'm thinking, shit, okay, am I going to need to get a plumber out? If so, this is going to take a while, which means I'm going to be without hot water for ages. Damn. So I made a cup of tea and assessed the situation, which is my usual kind of tactic for anything. I jumped onto a load of plumbing forums where you've got like, I was reading all these... comments, and it's basically what I'm imagining is like, yeah, so your warbling flange is needs tightening. You need to grab your size 4 spanner and just twist the knob to the left slightly and do a pirouette, and then it should be fine.
Every single plumber is the stereotypical boss man, white van man plumber.
So I spent about 20 minutes reading through these various things, and I couldn't find something to do with my specific boiler. So they were all on a theme of basically having to find like 2 different valves that looked like this and this that had a certain kind of cable. And there's only one, well, pipe. There's ones there. It was a threaded pipe, apparently. So I took the cover off the boiler and had a look around, and I saw that all that kind of the pressure was right the way down low, which is presumably why there was no hot water. So I went into the shed, grabbed a spanner.
Oh,
tightened.
Oh, stop, Dan.
I know. Oh,
sorry,
man.
I was so pleased.
I properly, like, I was wandering around in my pajamas, but because I'm a manly man, but I also didn't want to get anything on my pajamas. So I popped an apron on.
I thought you were going to be like, I put these like denim dungarees on that I just keep around for these.
Yeah,
these
and like a white dirty white vest. And kind of like, yeah. So I grabbed a spanner and I tightened some things and I found these two really quite hard to find valves, these two grey valves. Anyway, and I twisted them both at the same time, and suddenly some water kind of spurted out of one of the valves for a second and then stopped. And I'd read in the forms that this is okay. It's like, it was like clearing the line, and then it was going to use that clear to like rebuild the pressure. And I looked at the little pressure gauge and it was going up, and it needs to tick to like 1.5, and it got back to 1.5, and I turned the valves off and I retightened something and I left it, and then I reset the entire boiler and then stepped away. And then it rebooted again, and I was like, okay, well, it's maintaining a steady pressure. This is cool. Went up to the bathroom, turned the shower on, hot water.
In my head, you are Mr. Tweedy from Chicken Run when he's
this
like,
is, yeah,
trying
this
to fix the machine.
Me. Gravy pressure's going ding, ding,
yeah, literally.
Ding, ding. Yeah. And but I was so pleased. I immediately like text my dad being like, yeah, just fix the boiler. No biggie. Don't worry, everyone.
Did you suddenly sprout chest hair?
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was like Popeye, but like you put the last tweak with the spanner, the steam pressure like goes then like da 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 da, chest hair springs out of your chest. I got cancers on my arms.
I was super pleased. So I treated myself with the tea. I treated myself to the new tea that I got from Bristol.
You really should have treated yourself to like what is it? What builder's tea is like? Milky and sugary, isn't it?
Builder's tea is super strong. Builder's tea is just like you basically leave the tea bag in until it goes orange. It's really, really strong, really strong. And then you maybe a sugar, maybe.
I thought that it was milky. What's the one that's milky? Because isn't that what Stephen Hawking asks for in Theory of Everything? He's like, he asks for the. Hang on, I'm going to have to Google this. Like tea with. This is how little I know about tea. Tea with sugar and milk. Is there a name for that? No, apparently not.
Yeah, builder's tea, also known as a builder's brew, is an English tea colloquial term for a strong cup of tea.
Oh, there you go.
There is also a brand called builder's tea, which is fantastic.
Clearly, I'm not a builder or a tea drinker. So I did, but you are a tinkerer. I am impressed. I've never fixed a boiler. I don't think I've ever fixed like proper heavy machine. Well, it's not heavy machinery, but like, you know, household machinery before.
I was also at a friend's last night after dinner. We went out for dinner, which was very lovely. And I helped him just dismantle a load of furniture as well.
Oh, wow.
I've just had a bit of it's been over the past kind of 12 hours. I've just been doing all the manly man jobs. It's been really
manly
satisfying.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a first time for everything. I feel like this is going to send the Discord into a frenzy, imagining you as a... Can we get some photoshops of Dan as the manliest man imaginable? Immangible.
Yeah, I'm expecting some really strong memes. So there was previously the one of me that's like basically me in drag from that makeup video we did saying get a guy who can do both. On a similar line, I want this, but it needs to be my face again, probably with that makeup, but then on the body of like a plumber fixing something or like a carpenter building something, like a log cabin or something.
Can you get Dan into the start of a porn scene where he's come to fix a lady's pipes, but Dan is the plumber and the lady?
Oh god,
I want to see that.
Okay, yeah, make it so.
Okay, and we find ourselves in Critics Corner.
We do,
Dan,
we do indeed.
You are desperate to talk about something. I'm just
gonna, I really am.
I'll unleash the Dan, the Dan of War. Off you go.
Okay, so this is a message that first is going to go out to all of our dear listeners, our readers, apologies. And the message is this. Whatever
Fuck
you're
y'all.
Doing...
No,
whatever
Every
you're doing...
Every single one of you.
In the next couple of days, I don't care how busy you are, you need to find the time to go to the cinema and watch A Quiet Place. Because it is unlike any cinema experience I've ever had. And you have to see it in the cinema because the sound is so important. You need that, like, Dolby surround, blah, blah, blah. You need that, you know, like the sound just hits you. And it like, you experience silence like you've never experienced it before. And it's unbelievable. I immediately called Simon. I don't know if you remember. Just as I was walking out of the cinema, heading on my way home, we went to... view to see it, and I got to about the high street, so it's about 5 minutes out of the door, and then I was with Hugo and David, and we as soon as we kind of parted our separate ways, I was like, I've got to call Simon, I've got to tell it, he's got to go and see it, and I knew that I had to call you in person, not just message you, because you're not a fan of kind of scary thrillery films.
No, I generally speaking, I really am.
Anything that makes me absolutely terrified, and like it's that kind of. Mark Kermode said a kind of similar thing of where it's not the thrill of being scared, but that feeling is like reminds you how alive you are.
Yeah,
it's the same thing with like roller coasters. I absolutely love those because you just get this rush of like adrenaline and like, oh my god, this is I'm feeling so many different things right now.
Yeah, I mean, I hate roller coasters too, so this is consistent. Well, I mean, what films did this remind you of?
That's a really hard question, actually, because it is so different. I think there's an air of... I don't know if you've seen the film Misery.
Yes, I have, actually.
There's an air of that, and there's quite a few moments in that where it's just eerie kind of silence, and it's not overtly scary, the film.
It's creepy.
Yeah, there's kind of like a psychological horror to it, which A Quiet Place almost has because so much is dependent on sound and it really gets into your head. But I've never had this kind of reaction in a cinema before or B, just watching any film where there'd be particular moments where there was a build to something and I'd quickly look out of my kind of peripheral vision and look around in the cinema and every single person had brought their... like knees right up to their chest in their seats, wrapped around. They were like covering their ears or like biting their hand. Like I looked along the row and it was Hugo and David and myself. And the number of times where like Hugo won the award for like, he literally cleared about 2 meters every time there was a big scare. He'd like, just fly out of his seat. But it was just like, you left it and you didn't think like, wow, that really terrified me and what an experience. But like, you just thought, what a well-made film.
So, because this is giving me, it sounds similar to Dunkirk, how like in the cinema everyone like had their like, you know, hands covering their mouths.
Yeah,
like,
in terms
so
of building
tense.
Atmosphere and creating a kind of a mood within the theater, it absolutely excelled. But it was written and directed by John Krasinski.
Who is married to Emily Blunt, who is his co-star.
And it's just, like it's a fascinating performance. And so, you know, and there's some really great sections where, you know, like there's the tensest scenes and it's all done through sign language, which is something I'm getting more and more into because I'm going to start taking a course at work to do that because it's National Deaf Awareness Week coming up.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
I know
like the Apple Store down here are doing a load of things where we're doing like a load of sessions and community outreach and somebody who, you know, what was the film that won an Oscar this year?
The Silent Child, was it?
Yeah, so I think the two stars of that are going to be coming to the store to do like
cool.
a thing. Yeah, they're going to come and like do some stuff with us, which is amazing because she gave her acceptance speech entirely signed. But we've been I've been doing a load of courses and I've pretty much now got the alphabet down. But there's, you know, like particular phrases and things, but it's really good. I cannot emphasize enough how fantastic the film is. You absolutely have to go and see it.
It's actually kind of an interesting link there. I with the sign language, because I've often thought I quite like to learn. If nothing else, it's useful in loud places, like, you know, if you're in a bar or something and you can sign to the person like what your order is. In the book that I most recently finished, which is The War Master by Dan Abnett, which is part of possibly my favourite series ever, Gaunt's Ghosts, sign language actually plays a part in that, which is it's one of the aspects of the kind of realism of it that I've really liked, because it's following, for those of you that don't know, Gaunt's Ghosts is basically Sharp, the Napoleonic Bernard Cornwell series, but in space. It's far future Warhammer version of Sharp, but because a lot of people have been have lost their hearing through shelling and through the conflict, a fair number of characters communicate through sign language, which is kind of interesting. Like, obviously super easy to write as well. You just say that instead of somebody said, they signed. So it's like, as an author, it's almost like incredibly lazy to not add that level of detail. But it's like, it was one of the little things, like, you saying about it just sparked me remembering it, because it was a fantastic book, and that was kind of one of the little cool touches that makes it feel that bit more real. For those of you who are up to date with Gaunt's Ghosts, I feel your pain now, because I now have to wait to find out what's going to happen to several characters. And there's only one book left in the series, I think, and this is that, which will be the 15th book. I've come with these characters a very long way, and some of them didn't make it through this book, and I was not okay. I was not okay at points. To chime in with my own bit of criticism of something, because I haven't had a chance to do very much this month.
Yeah.
I will go and see a Silent Place. Sorry, yeah, it's a Quiet Place, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's just every aspect of the film. I absolutely loved. The performances are incredible. The kind of the narrative and like the pacing for something that's set in such a kind of really a short amount of time. There are two sections where you jump forward a few years. Mm. But also just the way the film is shot, it's just really well done. John Krasinski has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and it was his debut, right?
I believe so, yeah. Because, well, he originally gave the script to his wife, Emily Blunt, to see like what she thinks of it. And he didn't give her the script. He pitched the idea to her, and she said, oh, I've got a friend who'd be really good for this, another actress to play the lead role. And then she saw the script and told him to basically fire her because she wanted to do it, which is amazing.
That is a sign that you've done very, very well, I feel like, yeah. as a writer. Okay. Yeah, because like...
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I need to see it basically when I get a chance. This week I'm actually trying to ease off the work a little bit. I've got a vlog coming out later today. There's a science video which is written and should be super easy to do for this weekend. But like I'm trying to throttle off a little bit and actually, well, it's so I can throttle onto thesis corrections. Yeah. But I may well go and see a film this weekend then as like a treat. Like I've been all good.
Yeah,
it's about time that I was nice to myself. Mm. But wow, okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to sort of critique?
The Milk Carton Kids, which is my favourite band, they've just released a new EP in preparation for the launch of their new album that comes out on the 29th of June, I believe, which is absolutely amazing. It's a much bigger work than they've done before. This particular single is about 10 minutes long. And it's got way more instruments than they normally do. Like there's a lot of they've got like a cello and some violins, and it's called One More for the Road. It's fantastic, and as I say, it's in preparation for the release of their new album, which I'm definitely, well, I know I'm already buying, but I have pre-ordered a bundle where you get the CD, the vinyl, because I own Monterey, one of their other albums on vinyl, and it's awesome. Just kind of like you can feel a bit more of like the texture when you're listening to the vinyl, which suits their music so well. And it also comes with a t-shirt, and it's a really nice t-shirt. So gonna get that. So highly recommend the Milk Carton Kids. One More for the Road. Have a listen. They're my favorite band. They're amazing. And as soon as they are coming to the UK, I will definitely be going.
Yeah, because but you've already seen them before, right?
Yeah, I saw them in Union Chapel in Islington, in London, yes. 2 years ago, and it was fantastic.
What have I been listening to? I did find an interesting playlist on Spotify. I haven't been listening to a huge amount of new music recently, to be honest. But there's this playlist on Spotify called Peaceful Choral Music by Living Composers. Mm. So it's 50 tracks by 50 individual composers. Mm. So a lot of it I was aware of. Like, you know, you've got Whittaker in here. There's Rutter, unfortunately. You've got Pert, like Mila. Is in here, but then like probably about 30 of these composers I'd never heard of before.
Is there any Lestrange?
Yes, there was actually.
Yeah, Lestrange is awesome. Same with I wouldn't be. There's probably some Dove as well.
Yeah, there's what because it's limited to one piece per person. So the Dove is the his version of the Three Kings.
Cool. I've just heard his Te Deum.
Oh yeah,
it's awesome. So there's an album. It's Merton College. And the album is called Viri Galilei, Favourite Anthems from Merton College. It's an awesome album. Likewise, I've been re-listening to, I think, possibly the strongest choral music album ever produced.
The which is Six?
No, it's St. John's College. English Choral Music is the name of the album. It has, 17 plus 15?
32.
Yeah, 32. It's got 32 different tracks, and it's basically every big English choral banger.
Just looking at it on Spotify now. Hang on, have I heard this one before? Is this? I'm gonna listen.
I think
to
you
the
must have. So
track.
I've played it while you've been in, while you lived here for sure. Excuse me.
Okay. No, I haven't heard some of these recordings. Okay, because like
it's good album.
The St. John's recording of the Nunc in G, the soloist is flat in the recording that I have.
Right.
No, this is a different recording. Okay,
it's
good.
Really, really good. So yeah, I've been listening to that as well. And then just Psalms, as per usual. I listen to a load of those. I'm going to try and see if I can get a copy of the Exeter Cathedral Psalter, like the actual book.
I was going to say, are you preparing for cathedral stuff? Or is
starting
that, like,
to,
too far
yeah,
in the
so I've downloaded, I think, like, there's a collection of, I think, like, 8 or 12 volumes on Apple Music, so presumably on Spotify as well, of Canticle, Mag and Nunc settings. Mm-hmm. So every day, like when I'm walking to work, I'm listening to those just to kind of up my knowledge of Canticle settings. And then I'm trying to do the same with Masses because I think that's going to be the newest field for me because we hardly do Eucharist anymore.
No.
Whereas I'll be doing it weekly. So there'll be lots to do. Plain song mass should be fine, but it's the more kind of slightly more modern settings. But yeah, very excited to start.
Oh man, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can be critical about. I don't think there is actually. I think we might have to hold fire on Critics Corner until next week. And we've both seen Infinity War. We've both seen The Quiet Place. Hopefully, because I think Alex and I are going to go see it tomorrow night at midnight, and then maybe try and speed out a video. Yeah. So if I've gotten three videos out this week, it's been a Christmas miracle. And it, you know, I'm amazed that it actually happened, but you never know, it might. Okay, well, should we skip on over the fence?
Let's do it.
Top lad.
And thank you so much for tuning in to the Wikicast Spooktacular.
Are you a vampire?
I thought I was, but then I didn't want to do an accent because, you know, the borderline racism on the accents go.
Spooktacular!
Welcome to the spooktacular!
That's the fastest I've ever derailed something. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate. Sorry. Especially you told me to give the lead as well.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's great. Brilliant. Do you want me to do it again? Or?
No, you go, you do. You do you.
Okay. Oh, I can do me. Are you going to derail it again, though? Because I don't...
Not off the last time, no.
Okay. A big thank you to our chief steak sharpeners, Danny Dyer and Henry Brewster.
Danny Dyer, of course, he's a patron. Frighteners in chief, Simon Vase and Azagu Nagapan Nagasaravanan.
Our fake blood makers, Lewis Watson, Eric Davis.
Our real blood makers... Tapio Kirkinen and Davi Schramm von Tobel.
are Yeti hair cleaners, Billy Toulson, Elliot Conway.
Tension heighteners, Wonderful Stephen, Kieran Kelly, and Angela.
Gentleman in charge of stabby stabby things, Ben McMurty. It's the technical term.
Stabby stabby things. Referee for Mind Games, Jay Wright.
Chief Witch Cackler, David Scahill.
Head of Catering, Eva Kavanagh.
First aider on site, the Moustache Man.
Overseer of Killy Killy Death, Matt Maguire.
Our wolf handling team, Habiba Amjad and Dan Hanvey.
Our hand wolfing team, Miles Kornfeld and Jordi Eschendahl.
Head of Catering for Zombies, Connor Levers. Brains.
Brain donor, Alex Greer.
Our ghost busting team, Lachlan Woods, John Mannion, Nick Webster.
Who are you going to call? Simon Torseth. And directed by Luke Thatcher. Thanks to our patrons on Patreon.
Thank you so much. We love you dearly.
We really enjoy doing the movie credits. I think we might change the genre every week. That's just kind of fun. But honestly, thank you guys so much. You make this podcast possible. It's because of your support on Patreon that we had the capital to actually get test prints done for merch. We could afford to do that.
Which is now happening, which is insane.
Yep, there's going to be a week, less than a week now, actually, a couple of days. If you haven't put in a pre-order by the time the podcast comes out, get on it. Go to simonoxfizz.com/merch. Get that pre-order in. They're only going to be available for a couple more days, but it's only possible because of you lovely people. Last time, do you remember last time everything was poised on a knife edge on Team Cat versus Team Dog?
Ooh.
Do you want to go? You go and check.
I'll go and check.
So these are the people whose names you read out. They gave $5 a month. They are our top lads on the Wikicast. That's the patreon.com/thewikicast. But we also have two tiers for cats and dogs, for truly the best household pets. But last time they were stuck in a deadlock. Dan, what is the score this time round?
Unbelievably, we're still in a deadlock.
What?
29-29.
Well, and then literally a single person donating $1 a month at patreon.com/thewikicast can decide the balance of the universe of pets. This is real, really big stuff, guys. So if you think that, your household pet of choice is superior, which obviously means it's the cat.
Obviously the dog.
Then put your dollar where your mouth is. This is really excitingly poised, actually.
Mm.
Also, shout out to Georgia de Buryat, who has been donating without selecting a reward. I guess you just couldn't choose whether you're a cat or dog. But thank you, Georgia.
What a hero.
Top lad!
So, let's launch into Crisis Corner. We have an email here from Anonymous saying, "Hello, Agony Aunts Simon and Dan. I have quite the predicament for you to ponder over. This may be one of the more dramatic crises you've come across in the podcast too, but I'm interested in the advice you have to give. I'm a first-year physics student at uni who has had rather a wild ride from life over the past few months. Health problems, death of a good friend, bad breakups. He broke up with me a couple of hours before my flatmate's funeral. What a lovely lad. Depression and anxiety problems. Wow, that's awful. Due to this rollercoaster life has sent me on, I've become rather depressed and didn't go to my lectures. Now that exam season is just around the corner, I'm worried that my lack of attendance will lead to me failing of this year. I'm already 1 year behind my peers, and I attended school with, and really do not wish to fall further behind. Nor do I wish to experience failing again. My course is roughly 50% coursework. I do tend to get pretty good grades in the work, 70% to 90% usually, but I do have the help of friends and Google to do so as well. Do you have any advice for me in this late stage as exams approach? Thank you for the wonderful non-content you brighten my weeks with, Anonymous."
Wow, Anonymous, that's...
Yeah.
That's quite heavy stuff. I mean, first of all, that's a really rough ride you've had. I'm really sorry to hear about that. So a bunch of horrible things have happened, completely out of your control. And, understandably, that's had a negative effect on you. Mm. First of all, have you spoken to the university about...
Mitigation.
Yeah, mitigation. Like, that. If we're going to address, kind of the practical things, before we get to you, as in terms of your well-being, talk about the direct thing you directly asked about, which is, you know, exams. As Dan says, the talk to the university about mitigation, I think. They do account for exceptional circumstances.
They do.
I feel like death of a friend. I don't know if in your opinion, Dan, but I think death of a friend would come under that.
Oh yeah. Like, I think, you know, like just these compounding factors, ultimately it comes up to whether you want to go into or are required to go into detail or not for the headspace that you must be in and have been in for the past while. I would say is certainly enough. The trick with mitigation is making sure that you let people know kind of as early as you can. You know, there are equally that you can cut that quite late. I mean, I had an exam 3 days before I had an exam in January. I emailed the mitigation department and said, yeah, look, I can't do this exam. I'm really ill. And I had a note from the doctor and that was all fine. And it was processed and I'm now going to do it in August. But I think if you can kind of go into some detail as to how you've been feeling, not necessarily what's happened, but how you feel it's kind of affected your kind of mental health. And also they'll be able to see in the kind of the record whether you've been, obviously seminars are different because they track those, but lectures, if you haven't attended them and you just don't feel kind of prepared, you can always ask to resit later in the year. That's why they have a separate session, which gives you some more time to look over. But yeah, you definitely need to don't kind of try and bear this weight on your own. You know, the mitigation departments, certainly at Exeter Uni, is fantastic. And I'm sure it's the same where you are as well.
I mean, you know, there are systems in place for exactly this kind of thing. So I feel like make use of those systems. I mean, it's terrible what's happened to you. I mean, like, and obviously, like, you might think, oh, my boyfriend broke up with me, just before a funeral. Like, that's not the kind of thing you find easy to quantify. You know, like, it's like you might think that might not sound like a big deal, but I feel like it would be clear that that would have a very negative effect on you. So it is relevant to bring to the university the you know, everything that's happened.
Yeah.
I mean, and in terms of everything that's happened, I do actually, I've just opened your follow-up email, Anonymous, saying that you've been having therapy for depression and anxiety, but this has only recently started, and everything else happened at the start of the year. So obviously that's quite a lag before starting therapy, which is exactly what I was going to recommend. You know, it's all well and good listening to two idiots on a podcast, but we are not medical professionals, and no. Your mental health is, you know, your body. Everyone takes care of their physical body, which is just the meat cage that you live in, really. Like, and if you're willing to take care of the cage, why won't you take care of the animal inside the cage? You know, so it's vitally important that you do, if other readers are having a similar situation, that you do get medical help about this. Treat it as just as seriously as if it was a physical ailment. You know,
absolutely,
a physical problem. So that actually ties into what you said, Dan, about getting the note, and you know, having that to present to. If you can get something with whether that's counselor, doctor, or a therapist, if you can have a note to say, in their opinion, whether this has affected you in a substantial way, which it's pretty clear that it has, that will definitely hold sway with the course. It may well be that you have to repeat a year if you think that you would do better repeating the year, and you don't mind. At the end of the day, a year is very little at this stage in your life, really.
You also have got to remember too, it's an academic year, which isn't a full year. That's the other thing that people kind of forget about, is that if you actually look at the amount of time you're there doing things at the university, you're not looking at kind of uprooting your life January through December again.
Yeah.
It means going back through till what? September through till May, really. And that's it. And you can do, you know, there's lots of things to do in between then. You've got to put yourself first. I know that, you know, having the thoughts of being like, well, I'm already behind from others. You know, there's people who resit years because they change course. You know, they drop things and go for something else, which is perfectly doable. And the whole point of you're at university is to see what best works for you. Obviously, it's hard given the kind of financial kind of confines of trying to do that multiple times. But equally, you've got to put yourself first. And I'm sure that, you know, that, you know, there'll be a support network network around you that would help you with that kind of decision and understand. And, you know, universities are always, you know, you can be really surprised with how helpful they can be, actually.
Yeah.
Certainly in my experience, anyway, they were, you know, completely understanding. In my email to resit for this exam in January, because I was just bedbound and completely out of action. They were really understanding. I said in my email, look, I'm really sorry that I'm contacting you so late. It was my intention to, you know, to sit this exam no matter what. But on the advice of kind of like doctors, I shouldn't be there. They were like, no, it's fine. Don't worry. We're always aware that some things you can't plan for. It's usually the most important thing is trying to have some kind of support, in the form of documentation.
Yeah,
that backs up your case to the mitigation department. So that would be either from a kind of a mental health professional or a service that you may be seeing, or going in and actually speaking with, you know, if your university has a welfare team, to speak to them and to go through that, and then they can always put forward a case with you as well to kind of, so it's not just off your own back.
Yeah, I mean, do not think that you will be the first person that this has happened to. There are systems that are designed for this. You don't have to be afraid of those systems, because this has clearly seriously affected you. You just need that bit of sort of formality, the note from a professional.
It's annoying. It's kind of like a hoop you've got to jump through.
Yeah.
To get this, but it's, you know, it sounds like in this case, it should be. Sorry, I'm going to cough again.
Sorry, take your time, mate.
Yeah, sorry.
We'll all wait for you.
You go on. I need to get a drink.
I mean, the other thing I was going to say, Anonymous, was, I think you're doing exactly the right thing by getting therapy. And I think, don't mind, Dan. I think you're doing exactly the right thing. And, you know, thinking about mitigation is the kind of the formal thing. I think the other thing is to talk to your friends and your peers about everything that's happened. I mean, like, obviously that's a very very context specific thing. Depends on the friends, depends on whether you feel comfortable talking about it. In my experience, talking about the only thing that I can really relate to of the things that you're experiencing is the breakup component of it, but talking to friends about that, it made it inestimably easier. And if, you know, the classic thing about, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. I think if possible, surround yourself with good people. You know, you listen to the WikiCast, so presumably you have a cracking sense of humor. You're a wonderful person. That just so happens bad stuff's happened to. So you will have great people around you. sorry. You're all right, mate.
I don't know what's going on.
I think you're coughing.
Well, yeah. Thanks for your medical diagnosis there. I'm fine.
You're going to evolve into wheezing eventually.
I hope so.
Well, basically what I was going to say, Anonymous, is, you know, surround yourself with good people and, you know, talk about it. Talk about your feelings. I'm the worst person in the world at following my own advice, because I literally never talk about my feelings, but it is very important to do. So you're going to have to do it for me. You're going to have to talk about your feelings so I don't have to talk about mine.
We can attest to, if you're looking for some other people to talk to, in an anonymized way, the Discord, the WikiCast Discord, is a fantastic place. There are separate kind of audio channels that you can just speak to with maybe just like a small couple of people, or if you don't want to do that, but you just rather kind of actually have a conversation via kind of like a messenger, I can kind of fully attest that that community is the kind of like, yeah,
they're tip top,
the pillar of this podcast. They are so loving and supportive, and, you know, it's a really great place to be. If you haven't been there, I'm sure they'd welcome you with open arms and just try and help in any way they can.
They are weird. I will say that. I will put that little caveat on there.
But all the best people are.
We're weird. Possibly not quite as weird as some of the stuff that I've seen in the Discord after that My Little Pony incident. But
I actually popped in last night just to say hello, just to see what's going on. I do my normal thing where I go in and I see how long it takes people to realise that I'm actually there in the channel.
it's like, and then somebody be like, room and waiting for someone to notice you.
Well, I just sit there and I'm going to be like, I wonder if they see. And then I, because it's quite nice when they don't, because the kind of the conversation isn't about kind of how is your day. It's just them talking about something that may have been happening over the last couple of days, and it's just quite nice to be a bystander.
You narcissistic prick.
That's not narcissistic, it's literally the opposite of narcissism.
Look at this community I've built. Watch the ants scurry around.
Okay. There we go. Thanks for totally misinterpreting my point about us having a great community there.
It's all right. It's 2018, mate. It's what happens.
Apparently so.
Well, Anonymous, I'm very, very, to conclude, I'm very, very sorry to hear everything that's happened to you. I hope that everything picks up from here, and that, yeah, you're doing exactly the right thing. Surround yourself with good people. Talk to the university. Cheerful. And now we kick off Correspondence Corner with an email that says slightly urgent and was sent a week ago because we didn't do an episode last week. Sorry, Matthias.
Especially given that you needed your answer by literally the day of this recording. We're really sorry. But
oh, sorry. Also, you say in your first of many postscripts, Matthias.
Matthias, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, there's no H. I think in my head I'm thinking Tobias. From The Simpsons. Anyway, also, f*** off, Matthias. Simon, please don't use a Spaniard accent when you speak Spanish. My girlfriend is... she spent a year in Madrid. That's where I've learned Spanish. Of course I'm going to use a Spanish accent. Anyway, he writes, "Hello, British cat dog." 90s Nickelodeon reference. I like that, actually. Can someone Photoshop Dan and I as a cat dog? I like that. Long-time reader, first-time writer. My name is Matthias. Looking forward to listening to your pronunciation. Ha! I read the postscript. I'm originally from Peru, but I moved to the US, specifically Pittsburgh, almost 3 years ago. Pittsburgh's got a great ASMR name. There's a really great interview with Ellen Bernstein, I think that's her, from Requiem for a Dream, when she's like, "I really like working in Pittsburgh." And it's like, it's so ASMR. Anyway, moved to Pittsburgh almost 3 years ago for my master's degree. However, I'll be moving back home in a month. I wanted to write this email a couple of weeks back, but I was waiting for some admission letter to arrive. And also Simon's video on why you shouldn't apply for a PhD. I still, however, want to pursue the slightly masochistic path. Good for you. I've received two offers for a PhD in engineering, one in the US and one abroad in Singapore. Both schools are really good in what they do. They have great research environment, offer great opportunities for extracurriculars, and their respective potential advisors are really nice guys, really smart, and the research groups are well aligned to what I want to do, or at least what, you know, you think you want to do. However, one is pretty far from home, and by that he means Peru. The other one is really similar to my current comfort zone, smallish, cheap city in the Midwest of the US. Do you think it's selfish to be leaning towards the Singapore decision because of the cultural and travel possibilities and general living experience, but knowing I'll be really far from home?"
No.
Yeah. Well, you had to make a decision by the April 25th, which is today. So,
no.
Whatever
no,
we say, doesn't
it's a perfectly
matter.
It's a perfectly acceptable decision.
I think so. I think, you know, you've got one life to live. Don't, you know, like. I've been in a long-distance relationship for like 3 years. You make it work. You can make it work with family. You can make it work with your partner. I think if Pixel Girl decided that she wanted to move to Southeast Asia, I would eventually probably want to follow her. Well, probably would immediately, actually. But, you know, like, I'd respect the fact that that's what she wants to do. I feel like if you love somebody, that's what you do. You realize that they have their own life to live, right?
Mm.
Thanks, mate.
That's fine.
But yeah, I don't think that's a selfish decision at all. I think that sounds very.
I can understand why you might think it is a selfish decision because both are colossal. But you know,
yeah, I mean, like, do what you want to do. You're only alive for so little time on this planet, and you can't do anything when you're dead. So just do what you want to do. You know, as long as it's not hurting anyone. Thanks a lot for all the videos and vlogs. You guys are awesome, and hopefully my merch order will arrive safely to Peru. Oh, you're the guy from Peru!
Hooray!
Hey!
Thank you, Matthias.
Matthias, yes. Hopefully we got that right.
We have an email here from Megan. She says, "Dear sirs, I'm trying to remain Switzerland on the name debate because I firmly believe it should either be Dan and Simon or Clark and Moore, depending on how you're being addressed. I've been catching up with your podcast over the past month or so and have been looking for something to give me an excuse to take part in Correspondence Corner. And the other night, it fell into my ears as I was driving around the humble streets of Simon's hometown. Please, please listen to Barbie Girl by Aqua, but in Dutch. She's provided a link. There was a segment on Radio 1 earlier this week which featured translations of English songs into other languages, which I thought was perfect for the Wikicast, given your always entertaining attempts at speaking in foreign languages. And Dutch Barbie Girl was a particular favourite of mine.
Well, this might have to be... I quite like the idea of doing this in a future podcast, trying to sing. Because, Pixel Girl will sing Disney. She listens to Disney, but the translated versions Spanish. In French and Spanish. Yeah. So hang on, right, can we both listen to this? If I include us listening to this in the podcast...
Hang on, I'm going to have to play it on my phone. Give me a sec. It's just an ad I've got to wait for. Ariana Grande, get out of my face.
Get out of here!
My name is Mr. Wilson and I'm here to stay. I'm going to smack your ass in a major way. What you doing in my basement, kid? Get out of here! Get out of here!
Right, 3, 2, 1...
Oh, fuck's sake, I'm watching the English one.
Oh, you...
I was like, oh, this is really funny, but it's all in English.
Oh my god, you idiot.
Okay, right, I've got the Dutch one now.
Right, we're not gonna do that again. That, we've already f***ed it up twice.
Oh, Dutch is hilarious.
Give her to her to get bent.
Also, like, hey Barbie. It's just like a dog bark.
Wow, God, it's so pitchy as well.
Yeah.
Wow, that is hilarious. No, that's great. Oh, that's brightened my day.
I've got to get the Dutch Barbie Girl lyrics. I've got to find this. This is hilarious. It's like, because presumably that's Come On Barbie, Let's Go Party.
Yeah.
That must be Nimmin Ander in der Maling. Ah, ah, ah. Yeah. Or something like that. Wow. What an experience.
Ich bin ein blond bimbo Meisha in ein fantasy world. That's great. I'm a blond bimbo girl in a fantasy world. This is hilarious.
Mit
wow.
Blond haar krieg ik alles für elkaar. Niemand ander in der Maling.
I love him.
Bless him. We got an email from Dan Hamby. He's one of our top lads. Loving the new merch. I've officially given you guys more money than Hat Films. Now that is...
What a lad.
That is real commitment. Oh my god, he's typeset a proper letter as an attachment. Here we go.
Beautiful.
Dear Simon and Dan, and he's managed to put, even though it's LaTeX, he's put Simon in Comic Sans. Like, that's commitment. It's been a while since my last missive, but I thought it was about time to chime in with my ramblings. After you touched on audio hardware, I thought I'd throw some technical thoughts into the mix. So Dan is an engineer, for context. As an occasional audio engineer, there we go, in the theatre nightclub world, the change in hardware is having a large impact. Originally, DJs and other artists would rock up with a phone/laptop, and this would plug into the system using the standard 3.5mm jack. Then, other audio hardware formats started becoming more common, the Lightning connector being a big one. Fine, we get an adapter. Another point of failure, but we can work with that. Now, with more devices ditching the audio jack and moving to wireless audio, we're having more problems. Suddenly, not only do we need a Bluetooth receiver for their show, but hope their phones use the same codec as our receiver. Otherwise, there's a loss in quality. Normally, not an issue if you're using Bluetooth headphones, but if you're playing it over a rig worth over £250,000, trust me, you'll notice the quality drop. We need to standardize codecs and fast, similar to moving phones to charging via USB. In addition, there's a security issue. A wired connection is quite hard to hijack, they're not impossible. As soon as you're using Bluetooth, you opened up a new vector of attack on your system. See, DJs would just rock up with a laptop, yeah, okay, but not a phone. I wasn't expecting turn up to DJ an event. It's like, yeah, just put my Spotify playlist on, whack it in the top of my phone. That's interesting to get the insider's perspective, actually.
I didn't think about that.
But well, I guess surely for professionals, like true professionals, it's not going to replace it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, Simon, P.S. Simon, you like listening to Straight No Chaser. I'm pretty sure I'm your failed clone. Yeah, I love Straight No Chaser. I've been to see them live twice. It's probably the band I've seen most live, which is kind of kind of telling, because they're a collegiate a cappella group. Yes, a failed clone of Dan Hanvey is a strong thing to aim for, I think.
We have an email here from Dominic Delac. He says, Sehr geehrte Herren. That's Dutch, I believe. Herren. Well, Herren is
a very big bird.
Man in Dutch. Oh. Or men, I suppose, in this context. He says, first and foremost, my English is not the best. Growing up trilingual and at the same time needing to use all three languages, German, Croatian and English, constantly takes a toll on me sometimes, which means I'm not going to be proficient in one language anytime soon. With that out of the way.
I've been listening since, mate. Yeah. I'm terribly sorry.
You're doing perfectly well so far.
My English is absolutely terrible due to a variety of circumstances by my own control.
I've been listening since the first episode came out and finally decided to write to you guys. Seriously, guys, you're my favourite and only podcast that I listen to. Oh, well, thanks, man.
Well, being the favourite is easy then. Okay, yes.
One more thing to get out of the way before getting into the main reasons of this writing. Team Cat, not much more to say there.
Oh, yeah.
You started so well, Dominic. Simon is right. You've got to earn the love of a cat. Unlike dogs, he'll give it away to anybody, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
It has its place. But it's not worth
Simon, Simon, you have inspired me to pursue a degree in physics. If everything goes well, I'll be starting as of this year in September at the Technical University of Berlin after I finish high school.
Well, hey.
Speaking of Berlin, a couple of episodes ago, someone was asking about travelling in Germany. Wow, that was quite a few episodes ago.
Don't be harsh on him. He's probably very busy.
No, I'm not being harsh on him. I'm saying it's a reflection on how we've missed an episode.
Oh, yeah.
And Berlin is a great place for that. It offers something for everyone, be it art, architecture, history, music, food, or vacation at the same time. It's relatively inexpensive. The most popular sites are the Brandenburger Gate, the Reichstag, the Berlin Wall, Checkpoint Charlie, and many, many more. My personal favourite is the Tempelhofer Feld. It's a former airfield that's been transformed into a park. This is the one I was talking about a while ago. It's really cool.
It's
a former airfield that has been transformed into a park in the middle of the city. It's simply beautiful and a wonderful place to relax or hang out with some friends. And Simon, if you ever find yourself in Berlin, I'd love to show you around Berlin itself, if you see me qualified enough. At the very least, I'd love to meet up with you. And now a question for you and Dan. I'd love to hear your opinions on Stephen King. I personally love his books. I believe I own about 30 now, but I often hear that his creations are not real literature. I think he says himself at the best, I am a salami writer. I try to write good salami, but salami is salami. You can't sell it as caviar. So yeah, what's your guy's opinion on him? Signing off, Dominic, 2,795.29 souls. P.S. Regarding beverages, I'm all the way with Japanese-style iced coffee. Anywhere, anytime.
I don't think I've read a Stephen King novel. I've seen several of the movies that his novels have been made into.
Yep, likewise. We're not going to talk about the absolutely dreadful piece of work that was released last year.
It?
Yeah, absolute pile of steaming, festering nonsense.
Oh dear. Wow, strong words from a man and a banana suit.
Well, I thought it was absolutely crap, but there you go.
But like, everyone seemed to like it so much.
Yeah, it was rubbish. Because people are sheep.
They're wrong. Oh dear. Oh dear.
Well, there you go. No, I don't believe I've read any Stephen King.
Because I've seen Misery. I've seen Shawshank. Yep. Is that it? Actually, I swear there's more than that. I swear that there's like loads of Stephen King movies out there that I've sort of absorbed. Like I know the plots of. Like I'm aware of The Shining. I'm aware of The Mist. Hang on, Stephen King movies. Let's have a look. Yeah, The Mist, Shawshank, Stand By Me, The Dark Tower, of course. We've both seen that. The movie was disappointing.
Have we both seen that? I haven't seen that.
Oh, no,
I have. I watched like the first half an hour of it on a plane and had to turn it off.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible, wasn't it?
Yep.
I think that might be the only other ones I've seen then. Like, Jesus, there are so many novels that have been adapted into books. It's a movies. Can't talk. Carrie, I still need to see Carrie.
I'll have to read some Stephen King, I think, because obviously it's different consuming his work in a interpreted visual medium as opposed to his actual writings. I haven't read Misery. I imagine that's really good.
Yes.
The film is very good.
Perhaps if you could reply to us with what the best Stephen King book to start with is. Like, what's the best one? Because I would too like to get into it, but I have no idea where to start. He's got quite the oeuvre of how do you say that word?
Oeuvre? Or oeuvre? Yeah, that's
right. That is right. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, how many? I'm just gonna have a look. He's written 54 books.
Jeez.
Wow. And 200 short stories.
Jeez.
He's a busy boy.
Busy boy.
Because what was the first one? I swear the first one was like a massive success. The first short story was The Glass Floor. Oh, his first novel was Carrie, yeah. Wow, his advance for the book was $2,500. His paperback rights from the book later earned him $400,000.
Wow.
Jeez. But I'd love to read some of his stuff. But you're all right, you've been coughing this whole time.
I've had a bit of a weird kind of cold thing over the past couple of days, and now it's kind of, now I feel fine, but it's manifesting itself in that really annoying tickle that you can never shift.
Yeah.
So I apologize, readers, for the coughing. I'm trying not to. I'm so glad that there isn't a visual element to this podcast, because I have been weeping. You know, when you're trying to hold back a cough or a sneeze and your eyes just stream.
Yeah.
That's literally been me.
Just sat doing this podcast and weeping.
But yes, I do apologize. Please send me nice, healthy thoughts, because I'm over this kind of weird cold thing now.
Sending thoughts and prayers.
Thanks, guys. One like equals one prayer.
And now, to finish off, I'm going to paraphrase an email from Oliver von Kufstein, who emailed in before. If you didn't catch it, Oliver was doing a PhD in music. He sent us an essay, so I am going to abbreviate what he's saying to do with his thesis. So I can't remember precisely what we talked about last time, but basically he's saying another element that he is looking at is geography. At any given... Oh, that was it. Like the shifting from Baroque to Romantic, like, and the lag between that in music and art, like in different media. At any given point in time, Italian music is different from French music, which is different from German music, which is different from English music. I'm sure it's the same in literature and visual art. Anyhow, that's another factor to consider when changing between periods, as changes in style, depending on where they originate, often take some time to move over to other countries, if they do at all. So, Simon, in response to your question about my thesis, I'm in the first year, so in the midst of coursework, and will be for 2 years before actually getting to write the thesis. Okay, that's how it works for humanities PhDs. Because for science PhDs in this country, you kind of faff around for 2 years getting your research done, 2 or 3 years, and then you actually write it up in the last 6 months or a year. So it's not that dissimilar. And their specific research interests include 18th century counterpoint and Schenkerian analysis, which is a really interesting method of analysis developed by the Austrian theorist Heinrich Schenker in the early 1900s. He showed that a lot of Austrian and German music from the common practice era, so Haydn, Mozart, Brahms, could be reduced down to a simple descending mi-re-do or sol-fa-mi-re-do progression over just tonic and dominant chords. See, I don't know any music theory, so that is meaningless to me.
Some of that is making sense.
Okay, good. At least it is to one of us.
Yeah.
This simple structure can unfold across something as small as a minuet or as large as a symphony movement, and all the other notes can be stripped away from this fundamental line to be explained as mere passing notes or neighbour notes which serve to elaborate this underlying structure. Huh. I mean, this is the thing. I have no idea of music theory, and like that higher level of analysis is completely lost on me. I am so Luddite when it comes to music theory. It's interesting stuff, though. Thank you very much, Oliver, for that is really cool.
I'm gonna read through the rest of that email, because it does sound very, very interesting.
Yeah, I feel like there's some wiki links I'm gonna have to look up after that.
Yeah. And with that, it's bringing us to the close of the podcast. We do have a fan fiction from Cameron, but we think we're going to probably tack that on next week. We've been going for quite a while today. Simon and I have some stuff to do.
Yes.
But it's been really nice. Stuff. Thank you so much for listening. And we're really sorry that we couldn't do one last week. It's been pretty busy on our end at the moment, but we're back in full force.
I do miss doing the WikiCast when we have a week where we can't do it. Like,
yeah, it feels weird not doing it.
I actually do quite like Dan. I mean,
me too. I can tolerate Simon as well at the best of times. So
it doesn't
really
come
the relationship works
well.
Quite well. No,
but like, you know, like we actually do like doing this. So yeah, it's
off, mate.
Yeah, sorry. What have we? Sorry, that's your line. Fuck.
So, Simon, what have we learned today?
We've been talking about Andrei Vlasichev for all of 5 minutes because in a tiny old Wikipedia article.
Uzbekistan?
Uzbek, I should say, football player who plays for Lokomotiv Tashkent. And he made 11 appearances for the national football team. But then really, I chatted about going to the Oxcast for way too long, and people who don't like the Oxcast probably skip that bit. And then you talked about A Quiet Place.
Yeah, we had a big, 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 long old chat about that. We spoke about the potential editing opportunity for people who are interested. Email spongy electric at gmail.com with editing in the subtitle, and we can at least start that conversation with you. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and then after that, we had a crisis corner for the first time in a little while.
We did, yeah, and that was a really tough one, actually. I think that's the hardest one we've had. So, Anonymous, if you're listening, we both extend again our kind of like...
We're sending you hugs.
Sorry that you've had such an awful time with things, but hopefully, you know, with the advice that we've given and maybe some more time to kind of mull things over, things might get a little easier. Again, I'm going to plug the fantastic Wikicast community on the Discord. It's fantastic. They're super supportive, super friendly, and also super understanding that some people want to remain anonymous. So,
we all as a community possibly just imagine hugging Anonymous.
Yeah.
We're all
sending virtual hugs your way right now.
Like I'm doing a little hugging gesture, and I'm hugging the air in front of me. I'm assuming that Anonymous is about my thickness. So there you go, Anonymous. I'm giving you a hug. I hope that the community extends that hug as well, because we have barely met each other in real life, any of us, and we all care about each other a great deal. I certainly care about people in the Discord and who send in emails a great deal. So we've got your back, Anonymous.
We have indeed. And that's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
Or you could possibly edit some videos for us. Send in your Stephen King book recommendations, your reviews of A Quiet Place, and other thoughts on the show. They can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole. And
we'll see you next time.
I'm a first-year physics student at uni who have rather a wild ride from life over the past few months. Yeah, sorry, I'm kind of holding off a cough. Let's try again.
Get back, cough! Get back! The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!